go back to the daily calendar. How about if we go to the supplemental calendar? Stand at ease for just a moment, Mr. Majority Leader. Come back to order, Mr. Majority Leader.
Bill 5 for the purpose of taking up House Bill 40.
Is there objection? Hearing no objection, Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move that reconsideration of my vote on House Bill 40 be taken up the same day.
Is there objection? Hearing no objection, Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move that the House concur in the Senate Amendments Committee substitute for House Bill 40, CNRA, therefore adopting Senate Committee substitute for House Bill 40, CNRA, and ask that the members vote yes.
Ready for the question? Question for the House is, shall the House concur in the Senate Amendments to House Bill number 40, thereby adopting Senate Committee substitute for House Bill 40, CNRA? Members may proceed to vote. Any member failed to vote? Clerk lock the roll. Does any member wish to change their vote? Clerk take the roll.
29 yeas, 7 nays.
House has concurred. And the Senate amendments to House Bill number 40. Mr. Majority Leader.
Citation honoring University of Alaska Mining Squad 1989 U.S. National Intercollegiate Mining Champions. I ask that it be taken up as a special order of business at this time.
Is there objection? Hearing no objection, Mr. Majority Leader.
Move that the citation be approved.
Is there objection? Hearing no objection. There is objection. Mr. Taylor?
I'd just like to make a comment on the record that I think this is a really outstanding effort that these young people have made. I'm particularly pleased that the University of Alaska is again showing its what I think premier status as one of the finer mining colleges in the United States. And I think it's been a long time since we've seen something like this in the state of Alaska, and I'm really proud of these young people and what they've done. It used to be the University of Alaska Fairbanks Mining Department was known as one of the finest in the world, and maybe it's young people like this that are going to reestablish that for us once again. So I appreciate their efforts.
Is there objection to the citation? Hearing no objection, the citation has been adopted. Mr. Majority Leader, do you want to stand at ease for a moment? Mr. Majority Leader. What do you want to do? Okay. Mr. Majority Leader, I'm going to give the floor to Representative Barnes. Representative Barnes.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, I'd like to take this opportunity to introduce a couple of people to the body, two of mine and your friends. The one over in the corner, Mel Croxing, has been my friend for about 20 years. And in the back gallery, one of your bowling buddies, Eleanor Roser. Eleanor, would you help me welcome you?
Eleanor is one of the few people I'll admit that's a better bowler than I am. Mr. Ellis.
Mr. Speaker, under introduction of guests, I'd like to introduce in Gallery B a close personal friend of mine. He's a member of the commissioner's staff in Fish and Game, a fellow who used to hail from the junior representative from Mountain View's district in District 13, is now a resident of Juneau, soon to go off with his wife to Cornell to begin a graduate studies program. I hope the body would help me welcome Roland Shanks.
Are there other guests, Mr. Majority Leader? It brings us back to today's calendar. Oh. Clerk, read the next item on today's calendar.
Committee substitute for Senate Bill 198 by the Finance Committee, and acting to the authority of the Commissioner of Fish and Game to modify certain sport fishing regulations and providing for an effective date. The Resources Committee has had the bill under consideration and recommends it do pass. Signing do pass: Menard, Foster, Navarre, Sharp, Hudson, M. Davis, and Jackal. I have an amendment, several amendments on my desk, Mr. Speaker.
If we adopted the finance or the judiciary or the resource committee substitute,
I have to find it here. It came over, I didn't see it.
I got it, okay. Clerk, read the First Amendment.
Amendment number one by Gall to page one, line 13. Delete, increase, or.
Mr. Gall? Will the clerk read amendment one more time, please?
It's amendment number one by Gall to page one, line 13. It's delete, increase, and he added the word or before. I think it may be missing from yours, but it's on mine. Delete, okay. Increase, or.
The corrected amendment would delete the words increase, or. Is that correct, Madam Clerk?
Yes, Mr. Speaker.
Mr. Gall?
Move the amendment.
There is objection. Mr. Gall?
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'll make it brief. I move the amendment because the purpose of emergency regulations is to deal with emergencies, not to allocate in season. What the bill does is to permit an opportunity to, rather than summarily close a fishery when a conservation emergency develops, to instead reduce activity or change bag limits or methods of harvest. To allow, without board approval and by emergency order, the increase in activity in a fishery is to allocate indirectly, I guess you'd say, and I don't think it's appropriate. If the bill would result in a change in the regulatory process, I think the way to do that is through changing the regulatory process, not changing the emergency order provisions. There's a lot of controversy associated with this. I won't belabor the issue. I would urge support.
Further discussion? Mr. Taylor?
Yes, I thought others might be standing on this bill. My frustration with it, Mr. Speaker, is exactly what happened last summer is what's being suggested here. The silver returns were low in my district. The commissioner determined that certain closures should occur, which tied up three commercial fishing fleets. At the same time, he decided, or shortly thereafter, that reduction should occur in the amount of sport fish take on silvers and drop the limit, I believe, from 6 to 2, at which point lodge and charter operators in my area were having cancellations come in daily from people that were planning on coming up and said, no, I'm not going to fly that far and spend that much money if I'm only going to get 2 fish. We found out afterwards that was not an appropriate order. That's what this legislation is here for, is basically to cover his backside for what he did then and to give him the authority to do that. Now, my fishermen, commercial fishermen, have watched for my entire existence in this state, 28, 29 years now. During about 8 of those, I was a fisherman. I always watched the board meet every winter and set policies and set openings and closures. I never once went fishing based on a board opening. It was always dependent upon some biologist in the area who made a decision, and that was called an emergency opening and an emergency closure. What we're really talking about with this legislation, and I want everybody to think about this, is you're going to put a biologist and give him total authority over now the sport fishing in that area too. That can have a devastating impact on your tourist business. If the biologist, and it's only one biologist because that's who's designated through the commissioner to do this, if he decides, oh, there aren't enough kings around, nope, there aren't enough silvers around, I'm going to chop you back to 1 fish. Now, the fear that this thing is being sold under is that the commissioner can only act in one way. He can only act to either totally shut down a fishery or totally leave it open, because he can't pick a number in between without board policy. My frustration is I don't think he's going to pick a 0 in the middle of a heavy summer season and shut down every lodge and charter operator out there. And well, though I certainly strongly represent fishermen on this floor, and very often do in the commercial fleet, I also have to stand up for the rest of my sport fishermen down there, the charter operators and the lodge owners, who I believe will be negatively impacted by this. And I want to take my hat off to the gentleman who's been working in the halls on this, because he was kind enough to call a couple of my lodge operators and got a negative response from them on the bill, and was honest enough to come and tell me that, and I really, really appreciate that out of a person who was so strongly working on this bill. And I told him up front I was going to have to stand and oppose this legislation for those grounds, but I really take my hat off to Mr. Somerville. He's a really fine man, so that's why I'm opposed to it, and I hope you'll join me in defeating this legislation. Let's work out a better pact.
Anybody else on the amendment?
Yeah.
That's right.
Mr. Martin?
Mr. Speaker, on the amendment, strictly on the amendment, it just seems to me to be logical if you're going to depend upon our best people out there in the field or wherever they are, and I'm not a sports fisher. I like people that do it, but I don't do it myself. It seems to me if you're going to give them the authority to have to cut back when they see a very, very low run, then maybe two or three or four days down the line they see a heavy run coming through, that they should have the option to increase it. Just looking from a logical point of view, I don't think you can give them only a one way to go. You can decrease, but you can't increase. Doesn't seem logical.
Ready for the question? Representative McLean.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I had put my name on the amendment, and I withdrew my name on the amendment because one of the questions had been answered. My concern had been on the subsistence issue. How would it affect it, and found out that it will not have an effect on the subsistence issue.
Mr. Foster?
Likewise.
Mr. Majority Leader?
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. This would allow the department flexibility, and I would point out for members, if you look at line 13 of the bill, under criteria adopted by the Board of Fish, it would allow the department to increase or decrease fish stock, so that if there was an unusually large run that was in the river or in the area, they could allow increased limits. They could also, rather than simply close down an area that had a small run or that they were afraid of adverse impacts, they could either change the method of harvesting, perhaps from a bait to lure, which is a little bit less efficient, or they could cut down on the bag limits and still leave the fishery open, which might result in allowing some of those lodge operators the opportunity to have the people still come in and fish, although they would be fishing for less fish. So I think that this just offers a little bit more opportunity for sport fishermen. I have a letter from the director of the Division of Subsistence. It states that it has no impact on subsistence, and it should also have no impact on commercial fishing. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
I'm going to let the members who haven't spoken on the bill speak. Mr. Schultz.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I just wanted to, sitting back here, I get a little confused. Sometimes I can't hear all the conversation. But I believe I did hear the speaker from Wrangell stand up and oppose the legislation, the amendment, or speak in favor of it, and also the person from Haynes. And when those two agree on something, I believe that we have to vote this amendment down and vote for the legislation.
Mr. Hudson?
Ditto.
Do other members that haven't spoken on this issue wish to speak before the sponsor of the amendment wraps it up? Any other members? Mr. Gall.
Well, Mr. Speaker, as a courtesy to all the ladies and gentlemen around here, I'll withdraw the amendment.
Is there objection? Hearing no objection, the amendment is withdrawn. Does the clerk read the second amendment?
Amendment number 2 by Gall to page 1, line 17, and it has been placed on each member's desk.
Mr. Gall.
I'm not moving that amendment.
Not being offered. Does the clerk have additional amendments?
No, Mr. Speaker.
Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Moving to ask unanimous consent that the committee substitute for Senate Bill 198, Finance, be considered engrossed to advance the third reading and placed on final passage.
Is there objection to the advancement motion?
Object.
There is objection. Mr. Taylor.
I may not have made myself clear in my earlier comments. I'm definitely opposed to this legislation. I hope I've not engendered any confusion by my comments on the amendment. I'm opposed to this legislation in that it should not be allowed to shut down in the middle of a season where somebody's planned for months, set up staffing and boats and the rest of it, to allow that to happen. And this legislation will do that. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Mr. Gall.
Well, Mr. Speaker, at the risk of engendering unanimous support for the bill, I'm going to agree with the previous speaker. Specifically, what this is doing is adding more discretion in season to the department. And in general, I would support that because the department has the capability to look at what's going on in the fishery and try to make responsible judgments. The extension of that is we should eliminate the Board of Fish and have a full-time professional board of department personnel so that when an issue comes up, people can bring those issues to a regulatory authority at that time and get an immediate answer. The other side of that coin is that we like the idea of a citizen board, that it theoretically represents the citizens, and even though the last meetings of the Board of Fish have demonstrated what I believe is a lack of capability on the part of the board to adequately represent the citizens, yet that is the process we have. This particular bill is going to have allocation consequences in the field. Normally, emergency closures are there to solve emergencies. They're there to deal with short-term or even long-term, but certainly sudden, changes in the availability of the resource, and they're intended to protect those stocks. But to allocate mid-season by increasing quotas, and despite what other members have said, there's only a finite supply of fish. If they're going to increase quotas for sport fish, I think they should at least allow subsistence fishing on those stocks. In my area, that's not the case with King and Coho. They should at least ensure some equity in the application of emergency closures. The department has indicated it is unwilling to do that.
Point of order, Mr. Speaker.
What's your point of order,
Mr. Pittajohn? What is the motion on the floor at the moment?
It's the advancement motion.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
I'll hold my remarks till after the advancement.
Ready for the question? Representative Barnes on the advancement motion.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, at the risk of really confusing this body, I would like to associate myself with the remarks of the representative from Haynes. And I, too, object to the advancement of this bill.
Ready for the question? Question before the House is, shall committee substitute for Senate Bill number 198, Finance, be advanced to second or third reading on the same legislative day? Members may proceed to vote. Does any member fail to vote? Clerk lock the roll. Does any member wish to change their vote? Clerk take the roll.
30 yeas, 9 nays.
Motion passes. The bill's in third reading. Clerk read the bill for the third time.
Committee substitute for Senate Bill 198, Finance, by the Finance Committee. An act relating to the authority of the Commissioner of Fish and Game to modify certain sport fishing regulations and providing for an effective date.
Mr. Gall.
As I was saying, recently the department considered recommendations from the Board of Fisheries and legislation that's pending in this body to ensure equity in these emergency closures or summary closures. The department has indicated that it is not going to apply a rule of equity. It's going to apply a rule of convenience and go after the power trollers and the hand trollers with regard to dealing with shortages in these troll-caught fish. Once again, the subsistence fishermen are not accessing these fish in many parts of my district. I don't believe that turning the regulatory process into a field process is appropriate unless we really revise our regulatory system to accommodate that, and to ensure that all gear groups and all users will have an opportunity to participate. But none of that is happening here. What we've got is a way to increase or decrease sport fish harvest mid-season without any regulatory review, and therefore I do oppose the legislation. Thank you.
Mr. Hudson.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'd like to rise in support of this bill. It is supported by the department, the Board of Fisheries, and it is a top priority of the Alaska Sport Fishers Association and the Alaska Outdoor Council. And I think it's a bill that does provide the flexibility that is needed. We won't know, really, until it actually gets tried, and we can correct it later if it gives us a problem. But I think it is something that's been identified as needed, and so I'm supporting it.
Ready for the question? Question for the House. Shall committee substitute for Senate Bill number 198, Finance, pass the House? Members may proceed to vote. Does any member fail to vote? Clerk lock the roll. Does any member wish to change their vote? Clerk take the roll.
31 yeas, 8 nays.
Senate Bill 198 passed the House. Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Moving to ask unanimous consent that the roll call vote on final passage be considered the roll call vote on effective date clause.
Is there objection? Is there objection? Hearing no objection, the effective date clause has been adopted. Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. The next bill on today's calendar would be Senate Bill 15. I move and ask unanimous consent that Senate Bill 15 be held until tomorrow's calendar.
Is there objection? Hearing no objection, it will be on tomorrow's calendar. Mr. Majority Leader.
Speaker, the next bill would be committee substitute for Senate Bill 170. And I move and ask unanimous consent that that bill also be held until tomorrow's calendar.
Is there objection? Hearing no objection, it's on tomorrow's calendar. Clerk, read the next item on today's calendar.
Committee substitute for House Joint Resolution Number 13 by the Finance Committee. Proposing amendments to the Constitution of the State of Alaska creating a permanent endowment for education. The Finance Committee has considered the resolution and recommends it be replaced with committee substitute by the Finance Committee with a new title and due pass. Have we done this? Mr. Speaker, I think we've already adopted the Finance Committee.
Yes, we have.
Representative Collins, you wish the floor?
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Can I have my fiddies for just a minute, please?
Stand at ease.
We're in third reading.
Let's take up this bill first.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move that we recess to the call of the chair, and there'll be a majority caucus in the speaker's office immediately following recess.
Well, just like yours was today.
Well, that's right. We did have an opening.
So I'll announce to the rest of the body here that if we go longer than 10:30, we'll make communication with the minority leaders to inform you of what the schedule will be. We're in recess. Good. Stand at ease. Call the House on HJR 13. House, please come back to order. Representative Collins.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'd like to serve notice of reconsideration on my vote of committee substitute for Senate Bill 198, Finance.
Notice of reconsideration is given on Senate Bill 198. Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move that reconsideration of Senate Bill 1 be held over for one legislative day.
Is there objection? Hearing no objection, so ordered.
Speaker, I move that Senate Bill 260 be held one legislative reconsideration of Senate Bill 260 be held one legislative day.
I believe that was just reconsidered today, wasn't it? It's automatically up tomorrow.
Okay, 261, same deal. 264, 299?
Yeah. Okay. They'll all be up tomorrow.
Okay.
And so 198, what about 271? We're going to take it up tonight? Okay. All right. We have just a brief of these here. Let's get our act together here. House, please come back to order. Mr. Boucher, you have the floor.
Thank you. I would like to bring up reconsideration of House Committee Substitute for Senate Bill Number 271 resources at this time.
271 is before you. It's under reconsideration.
It's under reconsideration.
Yeah,
today.
He's bringing yesterday. It's available for reconsideration today.
Just we could have the title.
Yeah. Could the clerk read the title of the bill?
House Committee Substitute for Committee Substitute for Senate Bill 271 Resources Amended House. An act relating to civil penalties for the unpermitted discharge of oil and for the failure to implement an oil discharge contingency plan in response to an unpermitted discharge of crude oil, removing a maximum limit on civil penalties for discharge of oil and amending Rule 82, Alaska Rules of Civil Procedure.
Mr. Boucher, you have the floor.
I'd like to move back to second reading for the purposes of an amendment.
There is objection. Mr. Boucher, you have the floor. Would the clerk read the amendment?
Amendment number 9 by Boucher and Brown, and it's been duplicated and placed on each member's desk.
Mr. Boucher.
If you'd allow me just a little bit of latitude, sir. This bill came under full steam over into this body in a period of emotionalism from the other body. And it looked like I had a full head of steam heading out of here. And I took a look at it, and I was concerned about it. I didn't have an answer, but I knew I should stand up and say something on it.
As a result of that, there were two amendments put in it. $500 million or $500 million in two locations. Question was asked on the floor, what are other states doing? Well, I didn't have the answer at that time, and it was on a Sunday, but I've made numerous calls throughout the country on this particular issue. I really don't have an answer right now because it varies from state to state. In fact, nobody has had to come to grips with legislation of this particular nature. So I guess we might as well start here. I feel that the body, the intent, the thrust behind the legislation is good. However, after taking a look at it, I was satisfied that the civil liability, and if I use a few wrong phrases, I'm sure you attorneys will correct me, I felt that $500 million was adequate in that area. Well, I looked farther down at what I'd inserted, and we had managed to go from, thanks to the representative to my left, we'd managed to go from five times to four times, the penalty. But when I looked at the bottom, I saw the discharge was caused by the gross negligence or intentional act. The defendant did not take reasonable measures to contain cleanup and etc. And I said, well, suppose somebody really did that again, is $500 million enough? Now, candidly, the other night I had an amendment for $500, $600, $700, $800, $900. And I was going to keep introducing them because I hoped somebody in their wisdom in here would give me a figure. I didn't have a figure. So I put down $1 billion. Now, you know, $1 billion sounds like an awful lot of money. But I doubt seriously if anybody can add up and calculate what the final number is going to be when this entire thing is clean. So I'd rather be wrong being too high. And I know some of you have followed me, but I've never been afraid to say that I thought I made a mistake, and I think I have made a mistake. In fact, I wasn't worried whether I had the votes or didn't have the votes. I want each one of you to vote how you feel about the thing. But I don't want to see one go on the racks again, and it could happen. We'll hope not. I'm not a gloom and doomer, and found out that I had set a cap of $500 million on it. So that's the reason that the amendment is before you. Now, you can question my wisdom, you can question my judgment, and that's fine. But the real problem here is that these things, which we are passing one after the other, were brought full steam from the other side under a period of emotionalism while they were trying to correct a problem that should have been corrected a long time ago. And damn it, I'm the only one. I tend to stick my nose where I shouldn't, but I just feel a responsibility to do this. And as I said, I've been wrong before. But I feel under that particular area, and what it would do is if you look right under line 13, it would have parent D in it, and it says a penalty determined under C of the section is subject to a $1 billion fine. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Ready for the question? Right. Question for the House, or shall the House? Mr. Taylor?
Yeah. We are still under debate on this amendment.
No, we're... The motion is to return to second reading. Ready for the question? Question for the House. Shall the House return Senate Bill 271 to second reading for the purpose of considering amendment number 9? Members may proceed to vote. Does any member fail to vote? The clerk locked the roll. Does any member wish to change their vote? Mr. Gall? Mr. Gall changes no to yes. Clerk, take the roll.
20 yeas, 19 nays.
The motion fails. We're back in third reading. Ready for the question?
Mr. Speaker.
Mr. Pettyjohn?
It didn't come through.
I am afraid I'm going to have to locate amendment number 7 in order to make sense of amendment number 9 here, because it references amendment number 7. I don't have that in front of me.
Word.
Oh. I'm sorry, Mr. Speaker.
Mr. Grunberg?
Brief at ease.
Stand at ease for... House, please come back to order. Mr. Majority Leader?
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move that the committee substitute for Senate Bill 271 be held in third reading until tomorrow's calendar.
Is there objection? Is there objection? Hearing no objection, it will be held in third reading until tomorrow's calendar. Mr. Majority Leader? Can we go to unfinished business?
Speaker, I move that we go down the calendar to unfinished business.
Without objection, under unfinished business, I'm going to give an additional referral to Senate Bill 15 to the Finance Committee. That brings us back to where are we now, Mr. Majority Leader?
We're at 13.
13. The bill's been read in third reading. Are you ready for the question?
Question.
Mr. Speaker, the resolution is in third reading, Mr. Taylor.
I just wanted to bring everybody's attention to the fact this is the endowment for education. Is that correct?
Correct.
Constitutional amendment.
Correct.
Ready for the question? Question for the House is Mr. Rieger.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I did want the question is on HJR 13, final
yes.
passage.
Yes.
I did want to make a couple of comments. I wouldn't feel right if I did not, because I'm going to be a no vote. I'll have to stray a little bit, but since I've been down here, the legislature, by and large, has always fully funded education. And this year again, I think you will find that the legislature will have fully funded the foundation formula in education once more. The ledger that is before us is going to establish an endowment to finance education. But when you look at it in the big picture, what really happens if you establish this? Instead of general funds going into education, revenues out of the permanent fund, or a subaccount in effect of the permanent fund, go into education, and the general fund revenues, which were formerly going into education, are going elsewhere in the state operating budget. We always know that everything that gets put on the table gets spent, by and large. So we might find increased budgets elsewhere for data processing, for, as one member is fond of, engineers and planners in DOT, or higher salaries or whatever. It seems to me that we have done pretty well, and we have found money to fully fund the foundation formula with the amount of money that we have available. I've found that in general, the general fund as a concept is the best way to assure ourselves that everything that the state government is funding is properly scrutinized. Where we have found dedicated funds, I know in practical effect, the hard questions don't get answered or don't get asked as much or don't get asked at all. Someone looks at something and say, oh, that's program receipts, let it go. Oh, that's a dedicated fund, let it go. And the questions don't get asked, and the analysis of what's going on in there isn't done. This may, in a way, do a disservice to the efficiency and effectiveness of education, because we won't be asking the hard questions about what are we getting for our dollars. I do have one other point that I'd like to raise. I'll have to stray a little bit, but there was a a referral on this bill to finance. The bill was referred to the subcommittee in finance. The subcommittee never met. The bill was reported out without a subcommittee meeting. Another bill was moved out on a different matter, and it was ruled the motion out of order because the subcommittee had not met. I think that this bill has been rushed through in the final days. We're meeting to vote on it at a quarter after 11 in the evening. It's not like it's the end of the session. The voters are going to vote on it a year from now.
Mr. Rieger, please try to address your remarks. The legislation is in front of you.
Okay. I think that a vote on a constitutional amendment, Mr. Speaker, is a fairly serious matter. I think that it is entirely appropriate that measures such as this get debated fully in each committee, get debated fully on the floor at a proper hour. It's something which should go to the voters as a recommendation of the legislature, not a shrug your shoulders, the governor wants it, let the people decide. I think it should be both. We might want to have to take a look at what a dedicated fund will do to the operating budget and to education.
I'm sure, Mr. Rieger, you're not trying to suggest that that's any of our motives for voting for this bill.
Point of order, Mr. Speaker.
What's your point of order, Mr. Taylor?
Mr. Speaker, I'd like to ask the chair to address its concerns to Rule 90.2 in Mason's Manual, where it provides its fundamental rule of parliamentary practice governing all deliberative assemblies, that the opportunity to deliberate and, if possible, convince their fellows is the right of the minority, which right they cannot be deprived of by the arbitrary will of the majority. This speaker's been interrupted twice. He is addressing his comments strictly to this legislation in each of the interruptions, and you are now speaking as against the bill from your chair, which you're not allowed to do.
Mr. Taylor, I disagree with you. I suggest that there was an appearance that the speaker was arraigning my motives on this legislation by suggesting that it was a shrug of my shoulders. So if you please, I'll let Mr. Rieger have the floor back. Mr. Rieger, you have the floor.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, for letting me have the floor back. As long as we're speaking about motives, I'll only talk about my own, which I think is appropriate. My motives are not to do a disservice to education. Now, back to the subject, I do think that dedicated funds should be considered very seriously. This does create a dedicated fund. I think that the net effect of the dedicated fund will not be to alter the amount of money which goes into education, but will have an effect on the amount of money which goes into the rest of the state operating budget. Thank you.
Representative Boyer.
Could I have a brief at ease, Mr. Speaker?
We'll stand at ease.
Thank you.
Mr. Boyer, did you want to call Mr. Ellis?
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. It's been very gratifying to me this session, and I think to all of us on the floor who considers ourselves strong supporters of public education, to hear the discussion both on this floor and in committee, members supporting early funding of public education, full funding of public education, fair funding of public education, and forward funding, for all the good reasons that go with those various very positive concepts. Well, tonight we have the chance, through establishing or allowing the decision and the public debate to go forward about establishing a permanent endowment for public education, to address all those issues head on. We, of course, are talking about an education amendment to the Constitution placed on the 1990 ballot, an education fund established within the permanent fund and invested with the rest of the permanent fund by the same group of people who have performed so ably on behalf of the permanent fund, getting a very good rate of return for the money invested. Investment earnings of the education fund will be dedicated only to public elementary and secondary education, and that includes all the things that we're concerned about in our budget deliberations, the foundation formula, but not only that, tuition students, pupil transportation, the cost of school debt retirement, all of the various aspects, the entitlements under education, that we carry on about in our budget deliberations will be funded from the education fund if established. One of the previous speakers spoke about during the time period in which he served in the legislature, the member from Mid-Hillside in Anchorage, about there being full funding every year. Well, that may have been the case in our tenure here, but it's certainly not been the case in all the years. In fact, public education, the foundation formula has been cut in previous years, and we're just now beginning to recover from those serious negative impacts in terms of increased class size and a number of the other negative impacts on Alaska's children. And it's incontrovertible. All of us know that there is a downward trend in revenue to the state of Alaska. I think many people have been counting on future revenue streams from oil and gas development in the state. With things that have gone on, that it's difficult to determine at this point just what we'll be able to count on in the future to mitigate the downward trend in the Prudhoe Bay curve. The education fund's earnings are not appropriated for education, will be added to the principal of the education fund, and thus it will grow each year. The education is financed by annual deposits of 40% of the permanent fund earnings through the year 2005, plus any special appropriations we may choose to make. Education fund earnings are available for expenditure as early as FY92 under the committee substitute adopted by the House Finance Committee. So they're not completely off limits as they were in previous versions. The education fund earnings are not off budget either. The legislature must still exercise oversight by annually appropriating income to the foundation formula and other education programs, such as pupil transportation and school construction. And Mr. Speaker, I would beg to differ with some of the previous comments. I think in the subcommittee, Finance Subcommittee on Education, a number of questions are posed every year. We should continue to ask the hard questions about the performance of our public education system in Alaska and make sure that every dollar is wisely used. And so there's nothing about this proposal, if the voters choose to adopt this method of financing public education, that would disallow the legislature's oversight in making appropriations for the various components of our education program. Between the year 2002 and 2009, the education fund reaches sufficient size, even in the low case scenario, with a 4% annual rate of return on our investment, to provide enough annual income to replace completely oil dollars for education. And in my opinion, Mr. Speaker, there really is no higher call on public dollars than public education. It's a constitutionally mandated obligation of our state government, and to have children and our education system in Alaska hostage to the roller coaster of Mideast politics and oil price fluctuations is something within our power to control and to avoid, and that's part of the issue tonight. Annual deposits of permanent fund earnings can be extended to the year 2010 by a majority vote of the legislature, and this approach provides the assurance that eventually a full fund will be built up. Permanent fund current earnings reserve account will stay intact and is available for use by the legislature as an emergency cash reserve. Mr. Speaker, in all honesty, I have very serious concerns with proposals by the administration for education funding. But frankly, they've done their homework. They've listened to the legislature. They've listened to all the folks who have said, hands off the permanent fund without a vote of the people. And I really believe this proposal is a sound one, and that we should, with actions of this body, allow the public debate to move forward. The vote tonight is about children. It's about our ability to compete in a new world. It's about our ability to carry out one of the most basic responsibilities of state government. And I'd urge this body tonight to make a strong statement in support of public education.
Representative Sherry Davis.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'd just like to say, in addition to the previous speaker's remarks, Article 7 of our Constitution lists public education as number one priority in the constitutional responsibilities of state government. This legislation is supported by NEA Alaska. It's supported by the School Boards Association. It's supported by the administrators. I think that people have an opportunity here. to vote on whether or not they think education is as important as I think it is, and I think they will do that if we allow them the opportunity.
Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'd like to call the House.
House has been called. Stand at ease. Ready for the question?
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'll lift the call, but request that you put the call back on if you see anybody heading out the door.
All right. Representative Taylor.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Speaker. In this debate, I'm reminded of the comments I read from former Governor Jay Hammond, who stated that he believed that this concept, though well-intended, reminded him of an analogy, and the analogy he referred us to was the breeding of the sacred cow with the Trojan horse. And I think the former governor had a very good point. If we tonight, and tomorrow I suppose we'll vote on it again then, sanction this activity, what we are really suggesting to the voters is that we have found a subject that warrants dedication of a major and substantial portion of our permanent fund. The surveys that the current governor sent out just recently, 256,000 of them, when tallied and returned, indicated that there were three subjects that the public was very concerned about. One was capping the dividend. The other was in any way diminishing or invading the fund. And the third was any use of that fund by the legislature. The votes in that category, by the way, ranged in the numbers of about 83% against to 13% in favor. I had an opportunity just a few days ago to discuss this subject with our governor, and he indicated to me he'd taken another poll just on this subject of education, and that he had received pretty good numbers on that. And I'm pleased to hear that, because I think a lot of people very much want to see stability and security in the funding of education in this state. And I share that, and I want to see that also. I would like to see early funding and forward funding, the comments mentioned by the previous speaker. But I am very fearful of a dedication of funds of this magnitude, especially when over the next 10 years we may find it very difficult to continue to maintain full funding for education and at the same time be accumulating a large reserve to be used 10 years out. Now, I realize that since the concept first came up, modifications have occurred and there is an escape hatch now within the legislation that would allow for an earlier invasion of those funds by the legislature for the funding of education instead of having to wait the full 10 years. But that still bothers me in that I'm fearful that what will actually happen is that the legislature will decide that we really need the money for education, that we will take money out of that fund, and the year that we take the money out, maybe it's $300 million, the cost of this government will go up by about $300 million because we'll spend that on other things. And the part I like about this concept the best, I guess, is that we are going to have, because of the representative who sits behind me and the hard work he's done, we're going to have a commission, I believe, that will do work on the question of the permanent fund, how it should be invested. And I think this will be one of their prime topics. And I believe that a lot of public education will take place in the process. And then a vote will be held. And I believe that the people ought to have an opportunity to vote on what is going to occur with their permanent fund. But I don't think they should only be offered one option. And this is the only option that we are going to be offering them at this time. And I think that they deserve a broader spectrum than that and a greater choice. The comments that have been made on dedication of funds, I think, are very appropriate.
I don't believe we check things very closely, or as closely maybe as we should, when things are dedicated. When we have to find the funding for them each year, it's a little more difficult. I realize that if my district is split, I believe, on this issue, and at least I take that from the comments of my good colleague behind me, and I understand and appreciate those concerns also, but I do believe that it's appropriate for us to take a long and a serious look at this before we make this decision, because the people of the state and the amount of money involved and the children of this state deserve our consideration of this question. Personally, I'm going to be voting against this proposal this evening. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Representative Collins.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I think everyone knows I have been a very strong supporter and am a very strong supporter of full funding for education and early funding for education. And I come from a district where the people in the district are very, very interested in education. They become quite involved in their school, quite involved with their children's activities, and very, very, very much interested in seeing a good educational system. I was very surprised, therefore, when I did my annual survey this year and I included this question in my questionnaire and got a resounding no from my district. And many of the comments that you heard on the floor from the representative from District 8 and from the representative from Wrangell are comments that they made. And I think, you know, on the surface, it looks like a good idea from a common sense point of view. At this time, I think it's premature. And I think that if we truly make education a priority, then I think we will fund it out of our basic sources and not have to do develop an exotic source to fund it. Thank you.
Representative Barnes, Ms. Siegel, floor.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, I'd like to associate my remarks with the representative from the Hillside, Wrangell, and District 10. Mr. Speaker, I too have had correspondence and a survey of constituents on this subject. And I have not at any time had anyone tell me that they think the invasion of the permanent fund is a good idea. As a matter of fact, just the opposite has been true in all cases. I've had considerable number of POMs in opposition to this particular piece of legislation. Mr. Speaker, I believe in full funding of education. I support full funding of education, but I do not believe that this is the way to do it. I believe this is absolutely the wrong way to do it. I believe that there are other sources of funding that we can dedicate without invading the Constitution or invading the permanent fund to do it. Mr. Speaker, I think that the piece of legislation that is before us is very serious business. It is, for the very first time, an invasion of the corpus of the fund. And I very much have a problem with that. I don't have a problem with the interest being set aside through statutes, but I do have a problem by going into the Constitution and dedicating money in this fashion. Thank you very much.
Mr. Boucher.
Thank you very much, sir. I know the hour's late, and I'll be brief. I think each and every one of you know my feelings as it relates to the permanent fund. And evidently, there are a lot of other feelings. It's 40-30-30, and last week, when I was suggesting that something go into the corpus, I saw massive amounts of votes on this floor for stuff to go into education. You might go back and take a look at how you voted on that particular amendment, because those dollars were truly headed, and thank goodness they passed. They are into the permanent fund. But the difference between this idea and the other ideas that are floating around here is this is the first one that related to this subject that's going to go before the people. And you can be assured, if in the final hours the Commission on the Permanent Fund is passed, you bet it'll be on the agenda. And there'll be lots of airing for it. And it'll stand on its own merits. And I think it's about time that we opened up that opportunity. If there are other good ideas to put on the agenda, put the legislation out here. You know, I don't see anybody else that's willing to go forth and do it. So It doesn't have to be a choice of one or the other. This isn't a raid. I mean, are you saying that the people aren't intelligent enough to know if a raid would be conducted on it? I think it's about time we got the subject out into the arena. In fact, our good friend Jay Hammond, which we all have a common respect for, he said, I don't care what happens as long as it goes before the people. Now, he may have himself as a voter a bit of difficult with this, and that's his right. But I don't think that he would say that I don't think the people have a right to vote, to express themselves on this particular subject, and that's just exactly what this does. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Mr. Finkelstein.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. A couple of the previous speakers argued that their contacts with their constituents told them that the public's against this legislation. Well, my contacts during the campaign indicated to me that there's strong support among the public for this type of amendment, and I'm pretty sure that's the case. Now, I can't promise you that I'm right, that my perception is right. Maybe they're right, but if we vote for this and we get it on the ballot, we'll find out what the voters really do prefer. Thank you.
Mr. Martin.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I wholeheartedly support this. I think it's one of the best things we've done in many years. I absolutely believe in the right to the people to speak. That's why I would let them have direct access to the Constitution. The Constitution said the legislators cannot dedicate money. It does not say that we cannot give the people the opportunity to have a voice. And I agree with my cohort on the aisle here. Absolutely let the people speak on this issue. We can talk about forward funding, we can talk about full funding, we can talk about backward funding, anything you want, 100% funding. But there's nothing better than permanent funding, right? There we go. Trying to motivate me. Now, I really believe in the solid foundation of education that we have here. And I think as legislators today, years from now, when your children and your grandchildren are guaranteed an education, you can be really proud of anything that you've done in all the years that you've done and say, look, we made a solid foundation that can never be changed, except again with the voice of the people, that there will always be education in this state for children. You know, today many other states are really struggling to the point where they're even giving in to gaming as the number one way to support education. And they're finding out that that ain't the answer either. We've had people say, well, let's go to gaming, let's have a lottery, and leave some of the money for education. But we got the best opportunity, ladies and gentlemen, right now, and I'd like to ask everybody, really show that you believe in education and support this bill.
Mr. Boyer.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I rise in support of this bill, and just like to say that nobody got as close as I got to being thrown out of office for just having kind of thought about the permanent fund with leaking underground storage tanks in my heart. But that's lust, as we remember. But I'd like to say that the biggest dedication is the one that the representative from Mountain View just suggested, and that was a dedication by the people of the state of Alaska to put this money into the permanent fund. It dedicated an income stream that otherwise would have come to the state of Alaska in the general fund and would have been available for appropriation for any amount and any kind of thing that the legislature saw fit to do. And unfortunately, what the people of the state of Alaska decided to do was vote to put pork in the pocket. And what I'd like to do by casting my vote for this bill is allow them to vote for putting pork into education. So I would urge that all the members vote for this.
Mr. Davidson.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I support this resolution because I, too, think that education is important to our future and certainly important to our children. But we've heard a lot of political rhetoric here tonight. Oh, we're going to have to invade the permanent fund by doing this, and I believe in full funding and forward funding, and I support education. But anyone who is watching the oil revenue curve and thinking about the old rocking chair by the time this thing starts paying off, anyone who thinks that we're going to still be funding education that at the level that we need to fund it believes that the tooth fairy is going to come along with the gold bridges. Now, I think that this resolution is an example of how we invest our investments. And there's no better way to invest our investments than the future education of our children. And I support the, and urge my colleagues to support the legislation as well.
Mr. Rieger.
Speaker, just as a couple of points that were made, and I'd like to respond. One was, the member to my right talked about the subcommittee of finance, and I just wanted to say, to clarify, I was referring to the subcommittee on this bill, not the subcommittee on education. The member from the District 10 talked about a commission which might be reviewing some of the questions surrounding the permanent fund this summer, which I hope is successful, and I hope it learns a lot. Our vote today will not be affected by the findings on that interim work. The third point that I'd like people to make, to think about, and this is one that a point I made about 4 years ago, which I think is the last time that we had a constitutional amendment before us. I might be wrong on that, but that's the provision for amending the Constitution is fairly strict. It's the process has to be a two-thirds vote of this House, two-thirds vote of the other body, and a vote of the people. And I think that there are the high standards because amendments should not go into the Constitution without a very serious scrutiny and a lot of thought. I think that the one thing that I would ask of the members is that a vote to pass this should be a recommendation. I'd like to ask each member to think and just think about, is there room in a two plus billion dollar revenue stream to fund education as it is? As the member pointed out, where Article 7 talks about general law establishing a system of public schools, isn't there room already? And the second thing I'd like members to think about is, think about the effects of a dedicated fund. Think about the lowered level of scrutiny which I have observed accompanies the appropriation of dedicated funds compared to the appropriation of general funds. And is that a good or a bad idea? Does lowered level scrutiny help education in the long run? And finally, I'd like them to think about the effect of using some of the permanent funds earning stream to replace the general fund monies that now go into education. And what effect will that have on the other things that the state does and size of the budget and so on? Thank you.
Representative Ulmer.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'm going to break my self-imposed rule of not speaking tonight to just very briefly respond to two points that were just raised. First of all, the question about a dedicated fund. I'd remind members that the language of this resolution requires that there be an appropriation by the legislature. So it is not a lesser degree of scrutiny. We are talking about a funding source which will have to be appropriated by the legislature. Second point, will there be room in a $2.2 billion spending or stream of revenue to spend for education at the level we all feel is important? There isn't going to be a $2.2 billion stream of income in 5 years or in 10 years or in 15 years. That's what this resolution is all about. It's replacing the source of revenue for education funding in the future. It's making sure that there will be a stream of income for education in the future when there won't be a $2.2 billion stream of other revenue. That's what we're counting on. A firm base of available revenue for education spending to be appropriated by the legislature in the future. Thank you.
Mr. Hudson.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I guess everybody feels like they this is a very important issue, and it's something that they have to address. I'm deeply concerned
that within the next 5 years, that this state is going to see a sharp decline of revenues, and we're going to have a tremendous amount of ongoing expenses, from public protection to protection of the environment, to enhancement of the resources, all of the other types of things as well. My old friend, Governor Hammond, my former mentor, I think always felt that the best way to use the permanent fund was to keep it essentially as it is until some point in time when you really needed it. And that meant to continue to pay the dividends so that we politicians didn't get into it too much, and to have it inflation-proofed so that it continued to grow, so that the income stream was high enough for it to be of great value to pay for the services of government. However, my old mentor also used to say that, however, it really is up to the public, and why don't you present this to the public? Not necessarily just this proposal. I think Governor Hammond's idea always was to essentially present to the public a series of different options so that they could pick and choose a little bit. Which dividend do you want? There's lots of hidden dividends, I think the governor used to say. I am worried that we may sequester so much of these funds that we can't tap for 15 years except for small amounts, that we may end up handicapping ourselves in a matter of 5 years, and that bothers me some. But I do believe in the intelligence of the public, and I think that this bill is going to get out there, and the public will have a chance to debate it thoroughly. I don't know if I'll support it when it gets out there, but I am going to support it tonight, that we at least give the option to the public.
Representative Hanley.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Listening to the debate tonight, it reminds me that when the oil companies realize the price of doing business in Alaska, by the time we finish tomorrow night with all the legislation before us, I think the revenue stream will be even less than any of us are anticipating in the next 5 years. And for that reason, I am supporting this resolution.
Ready for the question? Question before the House. You shall committee substitute for House Joint Resolution Number 13, Finance, pass the House. Members may proceed to vote. Does any member fail to vote? Clerk, lock the roll. Does any member wish to change their vote? Clerk, take the roll.
30 yeas, 8 nays.
House Joint Resolution Number 13 has passed the House. Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'm going to move that, I moved earlier that we hold over until tomorrow's calendar committee substitute for Senate Bill 170, and I'd like to take committee substitute for Senate Bill 170 up at this time.
Mr. Taylor?
Yeah, first I'd serve notice of my reconsideration on committee substitute House Joint Resolution Number 13, Finance.
Notice of reconsideration is noted.
Could we have the clerk read the title of 170, please?
It's the procurement code, yeah. We've held it over till tomorrow, but apparently we want to bring it up today. So, clerk, read the bill. Read the title.
Procurement code.
Committee substitute for Senate Bill 170, Finance, amended by the Finance Committee, an act relating to state procurement.
Mr. Speaker. I'm sorry, if I interrupt
the
clerk, I apologize.
Yeah, the clerk, would you finish reading the resolution?
I'm sorry, I apologize.
The State Affairs Committee has considered the bill and recommends it be replaced with House Committee substitute by the State Affairs Committee with the same title and due pass, and it also adopts a Senate letter of intent. Signing due pass, Menard, Finkelstein, Boucher, and McLean, and signing to amend, Hanley, Zawacki, and Donlin.
Well, that's the second reading, right? Yeah. So please stand at ease for a moment. House, please come back to order. Is there objection maintained? Is there objection maintained to bringing this bill back on this calendar today? Is there objection?
Mr. Speaker, I do object. I think the purpose is to bring the bill back on the calendar so that it'll appear tomorrow in third reading. And the difficulty there is the moving back from third to second for purposes of amendment. There are several amendments available and ready to be placed on the bill. I would suggest, as an alternative, that instead that we allow the bill to be held over in second reading until tomorrow. It can still be advanced. We're in the last day of the legislature, and we can move forward with it then with dispatch. And we won't be facing that problem or that concern.
Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. The problem is that if we don't get advancement tomorrow, we can't deal with the bill.
You ready for the question? Question for the House is, shall the bill be brought back from tomorrow to today? Members may proceed to vote. The bill had earlier been moved to tomorrow's calendar, so the motion is to get it back to today's calendar.
Yes, you can do it.
What's Representative Brown?
Would you state the question one more time?
I don't think I want to. The motion is that the bill be before us today. Ready for the question? Members may proceed to vote. Does any member fail to vote? Clerk locks the rolls. Any member wish to change their vote? Clerk, please take the roll. The bill is
25 yeas, 12 nays.
Mr. Majority Leader.
I'll move that all of the bills on the first supplemental calendar be held until tomorrow's calendar. Any objection?
Is there objection? Hearing no objection, the supplemental calendar will appear along with tomorrow's calendar.
Except for the citations. There are 19 citations on the first supplemental calendar. Move and ask unanimous consent that citations be approved.
Is there objection? Hearing no objection. Is there objection? Has the clerk read House Bill 1, Senate Bill 170 in second reading?
No, I read it for the motion.
Pardon me?
I read it for the motion to go down.
I want to make sure we satisfy the second reading requirement today.
It has not been read this
Would the clerk read the bill for the second time?
Committee substitute for Senate Bill 170, Finance, amended by the Finance Committee. An act relating to state procurement. The State Affairs Committee has considered the bill and recommends it be replaced with House Committee Substitute for Committee Substitute for Senate Bill 170, State Affairs, with the same title and due pass, and adopts the Senate letter of intent. Signing due pass, Menard, Finkelstein, Boucher, and McLean. Signing to amend, Hanley, Zawacki, and Donnelly. I have one committee substitute on my desk, Mr. Speaker.
Mr. Majority Leader. Want to adopt the committee substitute?
Yeah, I got to find it. Again. Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Moving to ask unanimous consent that House State Affairs Committee substitute for Committee Substitute for Senate Bill 170 be considered in lieu of the original bill.
Is there objection? Hearing no objection, so ordered. Mr. Majority Leader.
Mr. Speaker, I'd move that we go down the calendar to announcements.
Is there objection? Are there announcements? Mr. Majority Leader.
Speaker, I move that the House stand in adjournment until 9 a.m. tomorrow morning.
We're adjourned.